So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Oh, the joys of working from home. 30 seconds before I walk to my microphone, baby spit up. On the shirt, down the shirt, in the shirt, you name it. So, we talked about confidence yesterday. You know, it's okay. Mom life. You do what you gotta do now. It's a joy to be able to work from home and be with my baby throughout the day. Joining me today, we're going to talk about how do you talk to someone about abortion. It could be a 12-year-old in your house and you have a pro-life house, but they think it's okay to be pro-abortion. Why? Or it could be a friend you have, someone you run into on the streets, someone you debate with on social media. Why are they pro-abortion? That's the question to ask, and that is the question to respond to. We'll talk about that. We'll also discuss the so-called Equality Act, and we have a number of fascinating questions that we'll answer today on the show having to do with intimacy in marriage, what happens when your spouse doesn't want kids, how can you still be romantic and intimate. We'll also discuss how much should you share with your fiancé or your spouse about your past sexual wounds. This is a really great question. What creates scandal and what is necessary perhaps for information? So these are great topics. We'll be discussing that and more today on the show. But let's start with a poll that came out this past week. We got to talk about it. So here's the deal. Most people are not okay with a bodily amputation and sterilization for kids. Most people do not want this. Yet, PBS and NPR did a Marist poll, and they asked a really oddly worded question that I'll just tell you, the question was written down, and I looked at the question, I said, I don't know. This is a question. Do you support or oppose legislation that would prohibit gender transition related to medical care for minors? Hold on a second. I had to sit here. I'm not kidding. I read the question 5 times. Now, you know, I'm pretty smart here. Usually I can, you know, read through a question. I read it 5 times before I went, I think the answer is no. But let me figure this out. Let me break it down. Positive, negatives in a sentence. Okay, so the bottom line is the answer is the opposite of what someone might think it would be. Basically, this poll was deceptive intentionally in the words that were used. So what came out of it is it made it sound as if most people support sex changes for kids. But that's not true, because most polls that have been done over the last few years have consistently shown that basically 7 out of 10 to 8 out of 10 people do not support sex changes for minors. And this is what's fascinating. People who are pro-trans, pro-LGBTQ, people who have been there, done that. People who push forward an LGBTQ agenda, a lot of them disagree with sex changes for kids. They actually think that you shouldn't do anything such as that until after the age of 18. So how is it that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, public opinion shifted? It did not. Here's the deal. It's a bluff. And it was intentionally used to create a poll to tell people what they should think because everyone else thinks it. You see, this is the attitude of quote-unquote groupthink. You should think this because everyone else thinks it. Well, guess what? NPR, PBS has fooled so many of us with polls and stories just like this. Most people do not support bodily amputation and sterilization. They don't support mutilation. This is what it is, and we have to call it for what it is. They're manipulating you to tell you to think what they want you to think, because it's what everybody else thinks. Now, here's something that's really important, because you're not always going to hear this referred to as a sex change. You're not always going to hear it referred to as a gender affirmation surgery. You won't even hear it referred to as sterilization, amputation, or mutilation. You're going to start hearing, and you probably already have, words such as gender affirmation surgery or cosmetic surgery. And so here's what they're doing. They're fooling people into saying, wouldn't you want affirmative surgeries available to minors, basic medical care? Wouldn't you want cosmetic surgeries that would make kids happier available to them, say if they were suicidal, depressed, anxious, or uncomfortable? You see, questions like that, people are going to say, well, of course I want basic health care available to people. This is not cosmetic surgery. A couple years ago, I interviewed a plastic reconstructive surgery surgeon discussing exactly what a sex change is. You know, there's such a thing as top surgery and bottom surgery. And just a little warning, little ears, if you're uncomfortable with people hearing this, I'm not going to go into graphic detail, but it's very important to recognize that we are literally hacking off pieces of body parts in order to accomplish this so-called cosmetic surgery and gender affirmative surgery and care. That's not what it is. And again, 7, even 8 out of 10 people do not support this. There was a poll done by American Principle Project, who has really kept their finger on the pulse of this situation. They've been studying it and taking public opinion for years on it. And 11 states said no to sex changes for kids, even all the way up to 85%, almost 9 out of 10 people. So why am I bringing this up? One, because we can't be fooled by thinking the way everyone else thinks. It's called groupthink, and I'm sorry if you think that way. You're being stupid. You are. How easy is it for us to just think what other people think? Because we want to fit in. We don't want to ruffle any feathers. Well, this is how stupid thinking goes. It leads to what's now so-called the Equality Act, which is being pushed forward in the name of a civil rights issue. Don't be fooled, because we have a weakness in society today for anything that's cloaked in the word civil rights. So the Equality Act is not the Equality Act, and we need to first and foremost say that. So what would happen with the Equality Act? There's too much to even cover in a one-hour show today. We would take hours to even scratch the surface. But I'm going to give you a handful of bullet points that you need to be aware of with regard to the so-called Equality Act. First, on the topic that we were just discussing, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. The first thing is the Equality Act would force hospitals to perform surgeries that mutilate healthy and wholesome body parts. That's what so-called gender affirmation surgery is. It's literally mutilating healthy, functioning body parts. Now, currently in 5 states, hospitals are battling over being forced to do such procedures. And if you have any questions about what bottom and top surgery are, we're going to post a link on social media now to exactly what that is, where I sat down and talked with a reconstructive plastic surgeon. He explains what top and bottom surgery are. You need to understand what we're talking about. This is causing permanent sterilization. It's a stretching, chopping, and manipulating skin, which, by the way, especially for a minor whose body is still developing, it prevents puberty from properly functioning. And also, there's only so much skin available. The skin stretches and moves and is damaged as growth continues to occur. And you can't just fix it and put things back to how they used to function. That's why it's called plastic surgery. Hello. Now, here's another thing with the so-called Equality Act. It would place boys in girls' sports and vice versa, and also place boys in girls' bathrooms. Here are a couple perspectives on this. Number one, it could put kids who are confused about their sexuality into the private spaces of other kids. Not a great idea. When kids are confused about their sexuality, unfortunately, and there's a lot of research on this, what happens? Kids start exploring with their sexuality when they're confused about it. You can understand what I'm saying. It's not a good idea to put kids then with the opposite sex kids and then encouraging exploration unmonitored. Because here's the deal. Because then you say, well, hey, this kid's doing something they shouldn't be doing with some of the other kids. Well, you're all of a sudden considered the equivalent of racist because this is the new civil rights issue, according to this movement. Not only that, a lot of young girls today have a hard time fitting in with other girls. So let's say I'm a little girl and I like to play soccer, but I'm having a hard time fitting in with the other girls on the soccer team. Oh, well, guess what? Who can tell me that I can't play on the boys' team? So there I go, I start playing on the boys' team because I didn't fit in. So it's telling little girls who are having a hard time making friendships, which is a problem that needs to be worked on, that they can just go and play with all the little boys because the boys are easier to get along with. But then at the same time, it's now impacting the dynamic of the boys' team who now has a little girl on the team. Anytime you bring a girl into an all-boys team, it changes the dynamic in the friendship between the boys. Boys need to have boy activities and girls need to have girl activities. Not only that, we put boys in girl sports. What happens? Boys have more testosterone, more oomph and power to their movements. They're injuring women all the time. Whether it's kids or adults, if boys are in girl sports. It's also taking away scholarships from girls. It's preventing girls from going to fantastic schools because they're not getting the scholarship because they're not the top performers. They didn't win the race because a boy was allowed to compete with the girls. And guess what? Sure enough, he won. Currently, 30 states are working to ban people of the opposite sex playing in the sports, especially for kids. This is good. You should get behind it if it's happening in your state, especially ahead of the so-called Equality Act. Here's another scary part of the Equality Act from Section 9. The Equality Act would actually enforce compelled speech. What's compelled speech? Well, it would require people to, quote, speak and act, close quote, in favor of gender ideology. So it's compelled speech and compelled actions. So this requires forced action. For example, for churches, this is a big one. It would lead churches to host events contrary to the tenets of their faith. It would also force business owners to violate their conscience in participating in programs and events they don't support. It's essentially taking away our freedom. But hold on a second. This is what's so scary. For the first time in the history of the United States, this would be the first ever federal regulation that would exempt itself from something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act provides protection for freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, so that we can act according to what the tenets of our faith uphold. And so by exempting itself from this regulation, it would mean that these points can't even be argued in court or heard. So even if you're in favor of any of the things I'm talking about right now, we should all come to an agreement that people shouldn't be forced into certain types of speech. They shouldn't be forced into certain types of action. And part of the scary part of Section 9 is that compelled speech means that you can't do anything but be in favor of and affirm a person's sexual identity, even if it's harmful for them. This is being masked in what's being referred to as a civil rights issue of the 21st century. There, people are trying to say that a child is less than human if they don't have this so-called access. But first, we have to recognize it's not a civil rights issue because these people are people and they're viewed as people. They do have access to basic and important health care. And in fact, they don't have access to enough proper health care that they need in order to properly care for the struggles they are going through, both mental health as well as physical health at times. Number two, to push forward, forcing hospitals to perform surgeries. Again, we have to emphasize this is bodily mutilation. It's sterilization. It's messing with kids' bodies before they've even gone through puberty, and it can cause lifetime damage. Third, it's a violation of freedom for any person of faith or people of conscience who disagrees with what this says. And what it says is that it's lying about what boys are and what girls are. Here's the reality. The biggest issue, it's a lie about the body. Anthropologically, physiologically, biologically, and theologically. It violates the purpose of boys and purpose of girls, the complementarity of men and women, the great value of human intimacy that can only be properly acted upon through men and women. When you try to function in physical intimacy outside of the sexual complementarity of men and women, guess what? It doesn't work. Just like you can't get gas without a female male head, you can't get gas. You can't function with your bodies in such a way. Not only that, recognize this. We see an astronomical increase in sexually transmitted diseases and damage to various body parts when we try to function in a way that they're not created to function for. Whether it's through acts that shouldn't be occurring between two people or because of surgeries that have occurred. And so when we're talking about the so-called Equality Act, this is not equality. It's not equality for people who disagree. It's not equality for those people who identify as LGBTQ. Why? Because it's saying that someone who identifies as LGBTQ can only have one life trajectory and everyone should force and pressure them into that life trajectory. We don't talk about this enough, but what happens if someone one day identifies as gay and the next day identifies as according to their biological sex and is interested in people of the opposite sex? That's possible too. But the Equality Act would usher people into a same-sex lifestyle or transgender lifestyle. And so these are important things to ponder and remember as we're talking about the Equality Act. This is why we should speak up with regard to the Equality Act and not stand by passively. Yesterday on Trending, we talked about anger. When it's right to be angry, when it's not right to be angry. This is something to justifiably be angry over. It's something for us to use that anger to build up the kingdom of God and build up what is true about the human body and human interaction. What is true and important about human freedom of speech, freedom of action, and religious liberty. Don't be afraid to say there is a difference between men and women. That boys and girls should have separate sports teams and that little boys shouldn't be allowed in little girls' bathrooms and vice versa. It's very logical. And don't cower like some people, to name one, Mario Lopez, who I really respected when he talked about how we shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff with 3 and 4 year olds. And all of a sudden he got canceled. And so he apologized saying he didn't know what he was talking about. We can't be wimps. We're called to be courageous. And courageous, to have courage means to act in the face of fear. Remember, with God, we can do anything. God is so incredibly powerful. And we are standing on the side of truth joyfully. And people are happier when the truth about their bodies is being acknowledged. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. I've had a number of fascinating questions come in. One of them I want to take right now. It has to do with intimacy in marriage when spouses don't want to have kids. This is a big one. So many people struggle. How many kids? When are we going to have them? It's a question that has to be asked and answered, especially because it can get a little tricky of how this works out in a relationship. So the question is this: how about a husband who wants sex but wants to use condoms? I don't want to and he does. So now we just avoid intimacy. We are 38 and 40. I'm open to more kids. He's not, due to anxiety, work, possible slight depression. We have 2 kids. How can we still be intimate? This is a great question because you are not alone. You're not the only person in this situation. And it's actually complex. There's a lot to this specific struggle. So let's walk through it really quick. One, the Catholic Church emphasizes that every act of intimacy between husband and wife is meant to be two things, two dimensions, unitive and procreative. That means that it's to unite the spouses for the good of the spouses, and it's meant to be open to new life. Now, using a condom ultimately violates both sides. It prevents new life from occurring. And so it violates a procreative side. And two, it actually impacts the unitive dimension, obviously physically because there's a barrier, but also interpersonally. It's creating a barrier in terms of what God created in terms of intimacy. It reduces an act of total self-giving love, even if it's slight, to an attitude of using the other person. And so it's very important for us to ponder this as a church, because a lot of people don't understand, why can't you just use condoms? Because both on a physical level and on a spiritual level, an interpersonal level, it changes how we view the other person. Also, I think it's important when you have a spouse who isn't in agreement with regard to how many kids and so on will occur within your marriage, you're posed with the challenge of abstinence and or proper use of natural family planning. Now, it's important to emphasize that natural family planning is not just Catholic contraception or birth control. It utilizes, for just reasons potentially, abstaining from intimacy during a fertile cycle. Now, each couple is culpable before God for their reason of abstinence. Now, that abstinence isn't easy within marriage. It requires honor of one's body, and it requires also that we're recognizing the importance. On one side, abstinence can emphasize the importance of truly understanding self-control within a relationship. Now, big picture, we have to remember, what's a marriage ordered toward? The Catholic Church emphasizes that it's ordered to procreation and the education of children. But the bigger problem here is that I understand, as you're asking this question, your husband's struggling with anxiety, work, and depression. This touches on a deeper issue of interpersonal struggle and a struggle for your husband. First, I want to recommend the resource CatholicTherapist.com, as well as the book by Ed Suri, Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love. These are great things and resources for you two to go through together. But here's something important. Men have this deep desire to protect and provide. And unfortunately, with the false labeling of condoms as, quote, protection, some men think that this is the best they're doing to help with anxiety and depression in their own relationship, and gives them this false sense that they're taking the right responsibility for them if they think that another child could be a threat to the well-being of the family, as unfortunate as that might be. It's also important to recognize that as you guys are working this out, he does love you, and it could be helpful to work on reducing anxiety. Maybe even ask, how can I help reduce your anxiety that's preventing you from wanting to have more kids? Don't include the second part, but what can I do to help reduce anxiety? How can I support you in your work and help in better satisfaction in your work? What's important is that your husband's feeling valued at home. If he's possibly feeling devalued at work and anxious and depressed with what he's doing. And it's also important, again, little ears warning today, intimacy can't be reduced just to sex. Work on the interpersonal dynamic. How have I worked to make myself and my spouse feel valued in the home? How can I encourage him in what we're doing and build confidence? Have you checked out the 5 love languages? Understanding what his love language is and filling up his tank in terms of that love language, whether it's physical touch, it's verbal affirmation, acts of service. These are all great things to help as you work through the challenges in marriage that so many people are going through when one spouse doesn't want to have kids. So I encourage you to stay with me. We'll be right back here on Trending. We're going to take more questions of yours, what to do when challenges arise with regard to how much you share about your past. We'll also talk about abortion and how you can talk in 4 easy ways about abortion to a friend, meeting them where they're at on the abortion issue. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Thanks for listening to Relevant Radio, whether you're listening on the Relevant Radio app, via the podcast, or live with us during the radio. If you have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149. I'll share with you a little bit of my thoughts on the Derek Chauvin verdict. If you didn't hear, he has been declared guilty on all accounts by the jury. I'll be interested to see what the reaction is tonight. I don't know about you, but I've heard many people have expressed extreme concern regarding safety. We'll discuss that and more here on Trending. I had another question came in before we talk about the issue of abortion in four simple ways you can work on discussing this with a friend, or perhaps you have a kid in your house who's staunchly pro-abortion and they're 12, as one number of you have actually written to me recently. How does this happen at such a young age? Before we go there, a little ears warning for this question. How much should you share with your fiance or spouse about sexual past? This question's riveting on multiple accounts, which is why I want to read it to you. Christy wrote to me on Instagram, a friend just asked me how much of her sexual past should be shared with her future spouse. She said, should I share with my fiance that before we book our wedding venue, since he might not want to marry me after? She goes on to say, one time when I was drunk, I had a sexual experience with my old high school friend that's a girl. She went on to say, my friend is married in the Catholic Church. She has confessed that sin already. She isn't a lesbian. She said it was just a one-time mistake, get this, of curiosity from watching how it's glamorized in porn and being drunk. This is a pretty intense question. From the side of same-sex attraction to getting over past sexual wounds to then getting married. And I want to address it both from the perspective of your friend who's struggling, and maybe you're listening now and you're working on maybe having had an encounter you wish you hadn't had. First, it's important to remember that in confession, praise God we are Catholic, you can be forgiven of any sin. When you were talking to that priest, listen, the priest is acting in persona Christi, in the person of Christ. It is Christ you are sharing your sins to, and it is Christ who is forgiving you. That priest is just a mediator there at that moment. Second, if pornography is still something you're struggling with, it's important to work on healing from that exposure to pornography. IntegrityRestore.com will post a link to them now on social media in the show notes today for the show, which you can find at relevantradio.com/trending this evening. IntegrityRestore.com, an incredible program giving you resources, information to heal and understand a pornography addiction, pornography exposure, and even how to help friends and loved ones who are struggling with it. As well as, if it's still a prominent issue, CatholicTherapist.com. One important thing is, if you're struggling with a pornography addiction, it's probably not a good idea to be getting married just yet. Healing from that pornography addiction is very important before getting married. And some people might say, oh, well, my pornography addiction went away when I got married. Well, actually, Karen, can you find that episode? We actually talked about this question specifically with Jim O'Day a while back. Fantastic question. Here's the issue. If someone goes from a pornography addiction right into a marriage without healing from that pornography addiction, the way in which a spouse can use their spouse is very disheartening and concerning, and that addiction can come back later on when there's some sort of anxious, depressive, stressful trigger that aggravates the addiction that it was never healed from. So we'll post a link to that if that's something you're struggling with and want to hear a little bit more about. But healing from that pornography addiction is so important before getting married. Now, also, it's important to recognize, just because you've had an encounter with someone of the same sex doesn't make you gay. Gay is an action. Gay is a lifestyle. It is not who you are or what you are. It does not define you. And there are a lot of people, and I really appreciate this question because there are more people than we realize who have had encounters with people of the same sex that they regret. They didn't want. Maybe did under the influence, or maybe they did because they were curious at a young age, or also because they were working out some type of wound that occurred in their own life of abuse as a child. These are all behaviors that are very common from people who have been abused as children. And so all of this is important to work through as well on your own forgiveness and forgiveness for those who have harmed you. It's a challenging thing, but this is where when you get married, it's so important that those wounds that you've carried from your past have really been worked on, healed, and that you're honest, most importantly, with yourself about where you've been and where you want to go and who you are today. But with regard to how much you should share with your fiancé and future spouse, it's important first to recognize, have I been misleading about this information? Have I lied about it or not shared information? I think that's the first thing. If there's something there, then that's something that needs to be acknowledged. However, sharing every detail about your past mistakes isn't something that you necessarily have to do. That doesn't mean that you're being dishonest. Remember, truth doesn't mean that everyone needs to hear it, because it can actually create scandal. Now, there may be things that you find are very important that you need to share. But also, sometimes what you have to share could hurt if not necessary to be shared. So it's really important that you ponder and pray through whether or not this is something that is necessary to share with your future spouse. Is it something that you carry a wound from going into a future relationship? That's incredibly important. Because if you're still hurting from this, then it probably is definitely something you should share with your future spouse about, so that they understand why intimacy might be a struggle or a trigger for you. Those are all really important things to ponder. And again, not going from the direction of hiding something, but acknowledging and really thinking through and praying through whether or not this is something that needs to be shared. Also, I think it's easy sometimes to lack confidence in the love that our future spouse or our spouse has for us when we feel like we've made mistakes. And we think that they'll love us less because of that, or because something we've done or something someone's done to us. And so it's important that we are confident in the love that our spouse has for us. And if we really think that our spouse is going to, or future spouse is going to leave us over a thing such as this, that's actually a bigger problem that needs to be addressed. That you truly believe this person is going to be faithful to you, even in the midst of your messiness. That is so important. I think that is the bigger question of having that confidence in your relationship and having healed from your past wounds. And remembering at the heart of this, to think and really take this in prayer, abandoning it to our Lord, abandoning any past wounds so that you can heal and move forward and have that healthy, happy, joyful marriage. And maybe you're married for years and you're still struggling with past wounds. These are all great questions for us to use and ponder to grow in our own marriages so that we can heal from the past mistakes and wounds that have been inflicted upon us to move forward and move on. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Let's talk about, I think, a really important question. We're going to come to Derek Chauvin and the verdict. He was found guilty just a couple of hours ago. But before we go there, let's talk about abortion. How do you convince someone that abortion's wrong? Especially when it is a kid in your house who is staunchly pro-abortion. I received a question the other day from a pro-life mom who said, my kid's 12 years old and he's extremely pro-abortion. I don't know what to do. Nothing I say is convincing him. What do I do? Four things to ponder. Number one, when someone, especially this young, but in general, the culture as a whole, when they believe that abortion is so important and so necessary, and that pro-abortion, they're believing what the culture says. Remember I talked earlier about groupthink? Kids really feel like they have to participate in groupthink in order to survive, so much so that they convince themselves of what other people think, because it's what they have to do and think to survive. Two, A lot of people think that pro-lifers are inflicting hate speech upon others for having an opinion that disagrees. And so they don't want to be a part of what's considered hate speech or intolerance. So that makes them so-called even more pro-abortion because they don't want to be someone hateful. Third, the culture is telling people that abortion is a basic women's health care right. It's a basic reproductive health care. It's a basic health care. So why would I be pro-life if it's taking away women's health care? And fourth, people don't know what abortion is. And I actually think this is the biggest issue. They haven't actually thought about what abortion is. So here's what we're going to do. Number one, on the front of believing what the culture says, it's important to tell a different story, to show a story of compassion. Stories where people's lives have been changed by pro-life intervention and resources. I worked for 6 years as the director of education for a crisis pregnancy center in San Diego and have worked with multiple crisis pregnancy centers, but also sidewalk counseling in front of the abortion clinics. And I've seen firsthand women's lives changed and transformed by a little bit of help, a conversation, help getting a car, housing, just having someone to talk to. A couple years ago, I participated in a debate conversation of sorts with a YouTube channel called Jubilee Media, and they have millions of views on all of their shows, and they have a show called Middle Ground, and it's where they take three people on opposing sides, and they have them debate three on three. And I was asked to debate the pro-life issue with three people who were pro-abortion. Now, it was fascinating to me because prior to this starting, I sat down, I showed up, I didn't know who was pro-life, who was pro-abortion. We were being prepped to go through and like meet with the team, meet with the cameras and start the conversation. And I was interested because one of the women who walked in, I sat down, immediately started talking to her. I could have guessed based on how she was dressed that she was probably pro-abortion. But we had a lovely conversation, talking about all kinds of things, and all of a sudden the producers of the show Middle Ground came in and separated us. And I said, oh, we're going to have you sit in this room and you sit in here. And I started laughing. I'm thinking, oh, she must be the opposition. They don't like that we're getting along so well before. Well, here's what was fascinating. As we start recording and we're on opposing sides discussing abortion, one question she posed to me, she said, you know, everything you're saying about being pro-life sounds nice and fanciful. However, who's there when the women need help? Who's there when one woman is struggling? She can't have this baby. You make it sound as if there are resources everywhere. What is the government? The government's not giving that. I laughed and I said, there are resources at the fingertips of crisis pregnancy centers across the nation. You need a car? I can tell you personally, I know a crisis pregnancy center director who 2 months ago bought two cars on one weekend for two women who were about to have an abortion. Change their lives, save their baby. That's all it took. Believe it or not, people are willing to step up and help when other people are in need. You just have to ask. And I think that that's what's so confusing for people who are pro-abortion. They can't fathom that someone would be so willing to help a stranger. Also, it's important that people understand that most women who choose abortion think they have no other choice. They think that this is what they have to do. Standing in front of that abortion clinic, I've seen time and time again this resignation to the choice of abortion. Why? Because they thought they had nowhere else to go. And so it's important that we're providing another perspective so that even people who are pro-abortion see, well, what if there was another option? Why wouldn't we at least provide more resources for other options to keep the baby or place the baby for adoption? I think something important to say here, too, if you have kids in your house, especially in the culture that we live in that puts so much pressure to be intimate too soon, I think it's important to tell your kids that if they do make a mistake and they get pregnant or they get someone pregnant, that you will always be there to help them raise that baby. You will be there to help be a resource to them. Because I've known plenty of good Catholic homes where someone got pregnant and they were scared. And in fact, they thought that they were going to have to choose abortion out of shame for their circumstance. And so a kid knowing that even if they made a mistake, and this isn't encouraging them to make a mistake, even if they made a mistake, that you would still help them through that. That can actually go a long way in helping someone to understand that we truly do help with regard to the pro-life issue. We'll post links also to that Middle Ground episode where I debated with those three people on the issue of abortion. It's fascinating. I have actually 12, 15-year-olds writing me all the time who watched the episode and said, my perspective's changed. I've never seen someone nice talk about the pro-life issue, which is crazy. It means they've never known a real pro-lifer. Third, it's important that people understand that abortion hurts women and that it's not basic health care. That's why most OBGYNs do not perform abortions, because it's not basic women's health care. It's not life-saving care. And we have to repeat that over and over again. Abortion hurts women. It's not health care. And finally, in an educational setting, it is important that we're showing people what abortion is. In an educational setting, we can show and tell people this is what abortion is. Abort73.com, we're posting a link on social media and it will be in the show notes. There are videos of what abortion is. There are comparisons to various things that happen in the culture. And especially for young minds, especially young boys who are so visual, it can go a long way in helping them to understand why abortion is wrong. And I'll tell you this. When I was about 12 or 13 years old, I grew up in the pro-life movement, and I started to think that, well, maybe it's okay if a mom doesn't want her baby, or if the baby would be in danger, that if she just didn't have her baby. And that's what I thought, you know, abortion was, just not having your baby. Well, I was wrong. And when I saw what an abortion was, and I saw images of an abortion, it changed my mind and changed the trajectory of my life, what I viewed. And so I think in an educational setting, it is very important. It can be helpful for parents to help show kids what it is. Visual reality of abortion is real. It hurts. It's sad. But it also tells the truth, and it saves and changes lives. And so there are links that we're posting on social media. You can find them at relevantradio.com/trending this evening in the show notes. I'll be right back here on Trending to talk about the George Floyd verdict. And we'll also discuss finding a sense of peace and belonging.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
...2020 riots and protests ravaged the nation over the Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on George Floyd's neck for over 9 minutes. And we've just found out that Derek Chauvin has been convicted on charges of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. The jury deliberated for more than 10 hours over 2 days, and this is the decision. And it brings to question mercy and justice. And here's why. Because I know a lot of people who were saying over the last couple of days, I hope he's guilty because I don't want protests to ravage the nation again. And I said, wow. So would we prefer that we don't have protests over one man being justly sentenced? People were saying this because Black Lives Matter and other organizations were threatening riots and violence. And I live in a downtown community, and, you know, there's concern. Okay, here we are. You know, what do we need to be prepared for? We're actually the only house on the block that doesn't have a BLM sign apart from one other. And, you know, here you are, a target for not, you know, group thinking, right? We should title this group think, right? And here's what happens when we don't follow the trend. You're in danger. And so, but here's the deal. First of all, I do think that people may protest whether or not They're happy with the verdict of him being guilty. These people who were rioting for the sake of rioting. They're upset. There's something deeply disrupting their souls. They're angry. Many people, when asked why they were rioting over the summer, that long summer last year, they didn't know. They couldn't put together a coherent sentence explaining why they were there. And so then the question is, should one man suffer and be convicted if he wasn't guilty? And of course, he was charged as guilty by the jury. Should one man suffer just to protect others? Isn't that the question that was asked about Jesus Christ? Right? Justice is important. Truth matters. And it's important as some people may want to villainize Derek Chauvin for what he did. There's no question about it. The footage of him kneeling on George Floyd's neck, even if the man was not a good guy, which was very evident of George Floyd and what he was doing and had been doing. But his neck being knelt on as such wasn't appropriate. But also you go back to the perspective of the police officer. What was the deeper context of the situation he was in? There's so many questions about training and perspective and lethal force, and we could debate that for days. But here we are, he's been convicted, he's guilty. So where do we go from here as a nation? Can we forgive Derek Chauvin? Can we acknowledge the fact that here is someone who made a mistake and who is paying for it? Or do we have to continue to villainize him, correct him, smear him through the dirt? This is where our Catholic faith comes in. Mercy is so important. Charity is so important. Charity is giving others more than what they justly deserve. Justice is giving someone what is their due, what is their right. And think about this. Justice, even in the context of work. Justice, even in the context of having hurt other people, even in the context of this particular situation, justice can mean receiving a punishment because that's what's good for the soul, to make retribution to society, make retribution for the family who's been injured, to make retribution before God for the healing of what one person has to go through. But we can't go so far into so-called justice that just because people want things a particular way as a society, that we punish someone and we continue to punish them for the rest of their lives. And so it brings to mind the question, how have I maybe villainized people who've made mistakes in my own life? How have I failed to help people in seeking justice for the situations that they themselves have participated in, so that they can heal and move on from the mistakes they've made? Isn't this a great challenge of so many parents? And I know I'll be going through this in the years to come. When your kid does something wrong, do you turn them into a villain and perpetually define them according to their mistake? Or do you forgive them? Do you have mercy? Do you help with a sense of justice and retribution, so they can move forward and move on with their lives? Or do we continue to holler at them that you're a horrible person? For some reason, people think that Catholics do exactly what the protesters nationwide are doing. For some reason, people think that Catholics perpetually are just going to say you're a terrible person for doing one wrong thing. So let's not fall in with what the culture is doing now with the George Floyd situation, villainizing a person perpetually for the rest of their lives. Mercy, forgiveness, compassion, justice, they're all important because ultimately we want the healing of the victim and we want the healing of the perpetrator. As hard as that can be in all circumstances, this is what justice and mercy and charity are. And this is why I always say, praise God to be Catholic, that we can be in the context of being able to run to the confessional, to be healed from all sins that we have participated in. As I think about this, you're joining us now, you're listening to Trending with Timmer here on Relevant Radio. I was reading yesterday from the New Testament book, the letter to the Hebrews. In chapter 13, it says, here we do not have a lasting city. We seek a home that is yet to come. If we're seeking a home that's yet to come, and that home is only in heaven, and here on earth, this isn't the perfect utopia world we're going to find. No, that perfect utopia that you're searching for is with God in heaven. So how can we work on a greater sense of mercy, justice, and peace? By understanding that we don't belong here. We belong with God in heaven. And that this is just a part of our journey to be united with Christ in the heavenly kingdom. How can we work on calming nerves and fear and anxiety in the face of things that are happening in the world that are confusing, disturbing, and incredibly aggressive at this point in history? How can we live more purposefully and joyfully by acknowledging that I was not created for here? You see those bumper stickers now and again, N-O-T-W, not of this world. This is where we're reminded again and again, the letter to the Hebrews, here we do not have a lasting city. We seek a home that is yet to come. Seek the home that is yet to come and recognize there is somewhere you belong. Where all these worries, all these sorrows, all these concerns and justice is perfectly met in heaven. You're listening to Trending with Timory. I'll be back with you tomorrow talking about spiritual and physical protection.